League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to Mint Podcast. I'm Nandita Mathur, and you're listening to our weekly news podcast. Friday is the day to look back on the week's news and stories, and who better to do this than the editor himself? In the first episode, I will be in conversation with Mint editor R. Sukumar, who takes us through his favorite Mint stories of the week. The stories he picks this week are an eclectic bunch, ranging from hard-hitting data stories to e-commerce and tech pieces that inform, analyze, and investigate. So let's get started by asking Sukumar what he looks for in a good story.
I think the most important thing for any story is to inform, explain, help people understand a certain issue better. It's to essentially make things very clear. And this is something that's become very important, especially in today's context, because there's so much information out there. There's so much clutter out there. And there's also a lot of very trigger-happy online journalism that we are seeing. So in the middle of all this, I think any story that can make things clear will really stand out.
So one of the stories that you mentioned was Roshan Kishore's story on India is the biggest virtual exporter of water. Why this?
Well, simply because we are at the beginning of what promises to be an extremely cruel Indian summer. It's an Indian summer that comes after two successive years of drought. There is water scarcity everywhere to such an extent that in Maharashtra, one of the states which is experiencing significant water shortage, the government has decided that Indian Premier League cricket matches will not happen because grounds obviously need to be watered and everything else. So Roshan, who's one of our data journalists, decided to do a series of stories. It's a two-part series looking at water consumption. And in part one, he looked at how efficiently Indian farmers use water. And it turns out that actually the usage of water by Indian farmers is very inefficient when you look at how much they use for the same quantity of produce. And the benchmarks are obviously global, but these are global averages. They're not best-in-class benchmarks. The benchmarks are really averages. And India doesn't do very well on that count. And in the second part of the CDC, looked at whether we are a net importer or exporter of water. And this is something that requires a little more analysis to understand. Any product, whether it's an industrial product or it's a food product, requires water in its creation. For instance, the manufacture of silicon semiconductor chips is an extremely water-intensive process. So let's assume a country is a huge manufacturer of chips and it exports most of them. It means it's not just exporting the chips, it's exporting the water. And there's data that you can actually use. Meat, for instance, any meat produce, whether it's beef or pork or anything else, is produced by using a lot of water, because obviously the consumption of water goes into that. So any country that, again, exports a lot of meat will be exporting a lot of water, and vice versa, which means a country like China, which is a net importer of meat, because China imports a huge amount of meat, especially pork, which is a delicacy in China, which is something they've started consuming more of. And any country that imports a lot of meat will be importing a lot of water. It turns out that India, especially because it imports a lot of food, and especially because it imports a lot of long grain basmati rice, is actually a net exporter of water, which is not such a great thing.
Yeah, should it be doing it is the question which the stories also point to, right? But both these stories also had a lot of extensive charts and graphs. So do you think that kind of adds to the package?
I think it's the easiest way to tell a story, right? Yeah. You have the numbers and you make sure that the visual representation of quantitative information is done in a way that makes it easier for people to understand that quantitative information. As long as you do that well, I think it really helps. from the perspective of how a story is understood.
Correct. Okay, next on the list is an e-commerce story by Shrutika Verma and Mihir Dalal. It's called E-Commerce Firms Put Sales on Hold, and basically how the three big startups, Amazon, Flipkart and Snapdeal, have cancelled planned sale events to avoid potential punishment.
But this is, in many ways, it's part of an ongoing process where Indian law is getting evolved and then refined and then changed. And so, because there are no rules as far as e-commerce are concerned, there were no rules. And the very concept of a marketplace was not defined in Indian law. And so how do you make policy for marketplaces? So the Indian government came up with some policies regarding marketplaces. Now, the interesting thing is a lot of traditional brick and mortar retailers have been complaining for a long time to the government that these marketplaces offer huge discounts, which means customers move away from traditional brick and mortar retailers to these marketplaces. They want what in India is popularly called a level playing field, which means, you know, everyone's treated the same. And their logic is, listen, you don't allow foreign direct investment in us, because the government's policy on foreign direct investment is that it will not allow foreign direct investment in what is called multi-brand retail or supermarkets or chain stores or things of the kind, the offline ones. But you're allowing it in these marketplaces. And then these guys are using some of this money, which is coming from venture capitals to capitalists to fund the huge discounts that they offer. So as a result, you're putting us at a disadvantage is the argument of these offline retailers. So the government seems to have listened to it, and it seems to have put some restrictions on the discounts that marketplaces can offer. So they have to figure out how they can deal with it. I don't think it's going to stop entirely. I'm sure they'll find a clever way of doing it, like they've always been clever about everything from how they are structured, their relationships with the resellers. They've, by and large, I won't even say they've stuck to the spirit of the law, because whatever law has been there, they've traditionally also flouted it. Right. I'm quite surprised as to why the government has not gone after them. But then e-commerce is a big thing. Startups are like flavor of the month. No one wants to be seen to be anti-startups. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why the government is turning a blind eye to this whole thing.
Great. So the other story is also related to startups, which is The True Value of Indian Unicorns by Karthik Shashidhar. So what did you think of this?
Well, this is a favorite of mine because this is a very, very quantitative story. Karthik is a quant jock, right? He really understands numbers. And I think he's created his own model for pricing options and used that to assess the true worth of e-commerce companies. Whenever an investor puts in money in an e-commerce company, it also gets some safeguard against potential devaluation. And this safeguard is essentially an option. So if you can price those options, the price of that option needs to be removed from the valuation of the e-commerce company. Right. And as a result, you know, there is a difference. So based on that, he's revalued a lot of Indian e-commerce companies. And it turns out that the number that he came up with could just be a coincidence, but the number he came up with for Flipkart is the same number at which Morgan Stanley valued it after a recent revaluation exercise in its filing with the US regulator. So I think it's an interesting story. It's one of those nuances in valuation that most people tend to ignore.
Technical, some would say.
Yes, it is. It is a little technical, but I think, you know, at Mint, the idea is to do interesting stories. It's to do, but it's also to do difficult stories. It's also to do complex stories.
Right.
Some complex stories can be told simply. This, unfortunately, is a complex story that can be told only slightly technically, but it still remains a favorite.
So one of the tech stories that you've singled out is, of course, Apple, which just announced its earnings. And for the first time, the iPhone's sales have slumped. But of course, India is a renewed focus for them.
Yes, I mean, in fact, the Apple story that I liked this week is an exclusive to Mint, which is simply that India is going to give them some concessions because Apple wants to set up its own stores in India. Now, whenever a company is allowed to set up its own stores, which means 100% foreign ownership, they have to stick to a 30% sourcing requirement from local suppliers, which means 30% of whatever goes into your product needs to come from local suppliers. Now, we all know that this is going to be impossible for in the categories in which Apple operates, and the government has decided to waive this. Now this comes around the time that Apple itself is shifting its focus to India, because clearly iPhone sales are slowing everywhere else in the world. Right. Apple has traditionally treated India like a stepchild, and I personally feel that it's a little too late for them to now start focusing on India, but still, it'll be good to have a few Apple stores. It'll be good to get the products as soon as they're launched. It'll be good to have some clarity about the price. But like I said, India is Android territory. There are a bunch of Chinese companies which are very strong here. Samsung is the market leader. So it's going to be a tough market for Apple to crack.
Moving on, one of the pieces that you mentioned was an opinion piece, The Long Road to a $10 Trillion Economy. So why this?
See, every now and then, we get really ambitious as a country and come up with this report on how India can be a $10 trillion economy. I remember when Atal Bihari Vajpayee was the prime minister, McKinsey made a presentation to him on how India could really achieve something of this sort. And he sat through the entire presentation and then asked, like, "Magar ye hoga kaise?" Which means, like, how will this happen? But the fact is, a report has been put out by the Niti Aayog, which is our central planning body. And there are a lot of cynics out there who say that this is an impossible target to achieve. In truth, mathematically and looking at the progress of India, it is not an impossible target to achieve, which is one of the two substantial points that our opinion piece makes. Mm-hmm. And it uses history to prove that point, because between 2001 and 2016, the Indian economy grew from a 450 million odd economy to a 2.2 trillion odd economy, 450 billion to 2.2 trillion, which is around 4.5 times, or 4.6 times. And if it grows at the same pace till 2032, which is the number that is mentioned in the report, it will be a $10 trillion economy. So, you know, it's something that's possible. It's not unrealistic. But the thing is, how do you get there? Mm-hmm. And there, which was the second substantive point that the article made, it differed with the report put out by Niti Aayog, which seemed to think that big projects with executive backing and not necessarily legislative support would suffice. Whereas our report believes that far more fundamental structural changes are required, that we need to do things that can increase investment in the economy, that can address so-called supply-side issues and improve capacity, improve the quality of institutions, right? So it is not an impossible target to achieve, but it requires a very different sort of approach than what we're doing right now. That was the sum and substance of our piece.
Next is Airtel's performance. Basically, Airtel has surprised...
Yeah, I mean, it surprised everyone.
Everybody.
And it comes at a time when telcos have traditionally not been doing well.
Right.
It comes at a time when volumes have not been going up. The good thing about these results is almost every metric is up, other than pricing.
Right.
and data traffic, again, if you look at it, has not grown as fast as it's done in the previous quarters, but it's still grown by a very healthy 45% or something compared to the previous quarter. So I think it shows... One, that people are talking more voice traffic. Two, it shows that people are using more data. So it's in many ways, it's a sort of return to health of telecom as a whole, right? Which had gone into some kind of tailspin as a sector.
Right.
But the interesting thing to do, and our story points this out, will be to see what happens when Reliance Jio enters the market. Because one of the reasons why Airtel has registered such a strong performance is because if you look at their network today, they probably have the most extensive 3G and 4G network in the country. By the time it launches, and you know we've heard this for so long that it seems like the story of Peter and the Wolf, but at some point in time, Reliance Jio will launch, and now the latest estimates are that it will launch by the end of this year. They've already launched a service for their employees. And they are seeing a report by a brokerage said that their employees use on average every month 16 GB of data, which is a lot of data. But these are 80,000 employees. The service is probably free to them. But still, I think India is a data-heavy market in terms of consumption. People like to consume a lot of stuff, including videos on their phones. So the thing to do will be to see what happens to companies like Airtel when Reliance Jio launches towards the end of this year.
Next up is an interesting story on Baba Ramdev and the biopic on Sony, which will showcase his Patanjali brand. So I'm just curious to know why you set this apart, because Ramdev has been written about so much and he seems more like a publicity and a marketing, you know,
see, the
exercise.
The numbers are very difficult to ignore. When you have a packaged consumer products company, which has doubled in size to around 5,000 crore in revenue this year, and which claims that it'll double in size again next year, it clearly means people are buying their products. And we know from actual feet on the ground, the fact that our reporters have gone out and seen what's happening, that they do have an extensive distribution network. But the reason why I picked this particular story was because if you look at what's happening, a lot of companies are increasingly using branded content to advertise themselves, to market themselves.
Right.
And this is the best sort of branded content that you can use. And because of who he is, and because the content is fundamentally very interesting, and a lot of people will watch it, I think he's gotten a very good deal with the media channel also. Because typically for branded content, you end up paying for the time.
Right.
But what he's done is he's not paying for the time. In return, the channel is also happy to do this deal because the content is engaging and they can get ads to support it. So I find this whole thing extremely interesting. It also goes to show that in India, anything related to faith, religion, is obviously something that sells, right? And a lot of some of the richest institutions in India are obviously religious institutions, right? Which are controlled by religious trusts, and in this case. It's interesting to see a for-profit company which, with such a strong religious, or maybe I shouldn't use the word religious, with such a strong spiritual connection.
Right.
Because the whole appeal of Baba Ramdev is yoga, right?
Right.
That's how he really became popular. And again, in his whole ascent to popularity in the 2000s, which was last decade, you will see that it was largely on the strength of mass media again. He used to do these yoga camps. There were many channels that used to televise these yoga camps and show them. And you know, that's one way in which he became popular.
Right. I'm sure the biopic is also going to do really well, but we'll wait and watch. And finally, we wrap up with Sukumar's final pick from this week. It's the story on the Ministry of Corporate Affairs, or the MCA 21 glitches.
I mean, it was an interesting story from two or three perspectives. One, because I was pretty amazed to see the number of things that were going wrong with this site, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we managed to speak to a lot of users, and it looks like the new system, because they had to change the platform in March.
Right.
It looks like the new system is a complete mess. The reason why we did this story is because this is a very important part of doing business in India. All companies have to file documents and financials and everything else. The filing has to be done online. India moved to an online system of doing this a few years ago. The initial contract to set up the system was given to Tata Consultancy Services, which seems to have done a pretty good job of it. The system was working well. But because it needed to be upgraded, the government, asked for fresh bids from companies which bid for it. And the contract moved from Tata Consultancy Services to Infosys. And that happened 4 years ago. The transition was not smooth, even back then. But I think things really reached a breaking point in March when the system was moved to a different platform. And I think it's something that the ministry is trying to solve. It's something that Infosys, which is managing the system, is trying to solve. But it seems to have created a lot of problem for companies. It seems to have made doing business in India a little more difficult, even though it's temporary, right? But it is a significant part of doing business in India.
Yeah. The worst thing is even the folks there are clueless, because they don't know. All they say is clear your cookies and use only Internet Explorer.
Yeah, I mean, which is in some ways the stock cancer you get even when you call up your telco and say, you know, my Wi-Fi doesn't seem to be working, right?
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.